Okay, we are November 18th, 2016, which is the 17th of Acheshvan Tavshin Ayin Zayin. We are in the Halacha section for Perek Yud, the first Perek of Parshas Bo, and as opposed to from here on in, after today, we have some pretty obvious Halachic topics in, I think, pretty much every Perek going forward. But with this Perek, we're still a little stuck. There is the Makkah of Arba and the Makkah of Choshech, but I thought of discussing the following topic. It says that at least for Mitzrim, it was dark for 6 days straight. It was even darker than dark for 6 days straight. So we have situations in our world, on planet Earth, that are also dark for several days straight, or several months straight, as the fact may be. So what is the halachos of keeping mitzvos, time-bound mitzvos? How do we recognize days when one goes to areas of the world where it is always dark or always light, depending on what time of year it is? So let's just lay out a little bit of geography. My understanding is as follows, that if you go to the absolute North Pole, the North Pole or the South Pole, it is light or dark for 6 months. The day is 6 months, and then the night is 6 months. That's the way it's set up over there. If you are from the Arctic Circle and upwards, there aren't too many people that live in the Arctic Circle and upwards, but if you live in the Arctic Circle and upwards, there are significant months of the year where you are going to have, it could be light or dark for like 2 months straight or something like that. And if you go to other very northern regions, so that are not necessarily above the Arctic Circle, places like Alaska or Stockholm or Oslo, places like that, so it does get dark, but doesn't get that dark. It doesn't. The stars don't actually really come out. It's just it gets dark for a little bit, but it's not really that dark. And that could be at midnight, 1 a.m, 2 a.m. So this wreaks a havoc for two things. One issue with regards to daily mitzvos: can one perform mitzvos that one is obligated to do during the day, such as tefillin, shacharis, mincha, bris milah, things like that, that where you're obligated to do it during the day. So can one do those in these areas of the world when it's not really day? And then the second issue, which is of significant concern, is that of Shabbos. So which day, how do you figure out when Shabbos actually is going to be? So that is, those are the shilas. A couple of years ago, when I went to Berlin for that conference, so I flew back via Oslo. So I was in the Oslo airport for a few hours. Yeah, the stereotypical Norwegian is tall, blonde hair. Yeah, they were all tall and blonde hair. I'm not sure if I fit in or didn't fit in, but that's what I saw when I was in that airport for several hours. But on my flight back to America, so I just talked to the people in the seats next to me. I asked them where they're from. So they're from northern Norway. Wow. So I said, "How do you like? Why? Why did you end up there?" So he said, "Well, I went because I married her. So I went to where she lives." I said, "How long has your family been there?" "Oh, for generations and generations." I'm thinking, so you're Vikings. That's what that means. So I asked them why they're coming to America, and they said, "Well, I think I made a joke. So are you coming to America to?" It was the middle of June. "So you're coming to America to get some sleep? Is that the purpose of your trip?" "Well, yeah, that's part of our trip. But yeah, it is light for the entire day." And I also saw someone did a documentary about high school football in random areas of the country. So for some reason I saw the one about a high school football team in Alaska where outside is obviously very, very cold. They travel these towns in the middle of nowhere. You have to fly wherever you want to go. So this high school football team's got to fly wherever they, if they ever want to play things. And apparently the degree of alcoholism in Alaska is a big, big problem. First of all, because there's a significant welfare state there in the first place. There's a lot of money from the government that you get just for living there. Your tax return is how much money you get, not how much money you give if you live in a place like Alaska. And because of the oil revenues and because of they just want to incentivize people living there. And then beyond that, the fact that it's dark 23 and a half hours of the day or 24 hours of the day is is get depressing after a while. So, anyways, so but there are Jewish communities in these places. Oslo has been in the news recently. There was an issue. There's an issue in Oslo. There's a shooting at a JCC there or something. There's something that happened in Norway recently involving terrorism, I think. Stockholm has a community. And certainly in Alaska, there's Chabad communities in Alaska. I came across, I'm going to mention this at the end, we'll just mention it now. I remember always hearing that, oh, there's a mikvah at Barrows Air Force Base. So I looked at a map of where Barrows Air Force Base is. Barrows Air Force Base is north of Alaska. It is way, way up there. So I looked around. With the help of Google, I think whoever told me that was a little bit off. There was a mikvah at an Air Force Base about 20, 30 miles out of Anchorage.
That guy wrote a book, The Rabbi from that.
Yes. Oh, very good.
I heard him lecture. He was here.
That rabbi. Oh, so I came across that. So there's an outtake of that book online where he discusses that in the 50s there was a rabbi who they wanted to hire an Orthodox chaplain. The chaplain said, "Well, I'm not going unless there's a mikveh." So he said, "Fine, we'll build you a mikveh." And he goes there and he's in touch with this. There's an expert in mikvos, a Lubavitch expert in mikvos, who lived in Minnesota. So he's the one who sent the plans, and then when it was ultimately going to be time to build it, so he was going to fly in. So they had him fly in, and he meets the head of the engineering corps of the base who was supposed to be building this, and they show him their plans, he discusses their plans, and he has this whole story where the person living there, the chaplain, told the Lubavitch rabbi, who was also Lubavitch, but was a chaplain on a military base, says, the custom on these military bases are that you're not allowed to wear your hat. Yeah, everybody takes off their hat when they come onto the base. So Lubavitch rabbi said, "Yep, at your command, sir," or something. So, assuming that he'll take off his hat, so they show up on the base, and the Lubavitcher rabbi puts his hand on his head and makes sure his hat is firmly in place, doesn't take it off, and meets the general. And the general says to him, "These are our plans," and they're discussing, and they have the plans on the board. In which the Lubavitcher rabbi said, "I hate to impose, but you're doing it all wrong." And he starts rattling off all these engineering issues, which he doesn't, the rabbi who's writing the book doesn't say what it is. And the general was very impressed. And he said something like, "One person in this room looks like a rabbi, but is really an engineer." That was the reference to this person. And they ended up building a mikveh at this Air Force Base. This is in the 50s. They built a mikveh in the Air Force Base, and then apparently a couple decades went by, and apparently the Rebbe had a rule that he'll send shlichim wherever in the world they want. You don't need to have a shul, you don't need to have a school, but you need to have a mikveh. He wouldn't send shlichim to a place where they don't have access to a mikveh. So he sent people to Alaska because there was this mikveh on this Air Force Base that they can get to. But then this chaplain is no longer there, and the general on the base said, "We're getting rid of the mikveh." So the Babbage community raised the $300,000 or so to build a mikveh, like within a couple of months, and they went ahead and did it. But it's pretty neat story about some places out in the middle of nowhere. There's one other issue, which there's an article from the Star K that I came across from Rav David Heber, where he points out there's one other issue which is also of significance. We're discussing these issues, and that is a lot of flights travel across the North Pole. That if you want to get to East Asia, so the quickest route is to fly above the North Pole. So you have these issues don't just happen if you, for some cockamamie reason, end up in those places, but even if you're just flying across those places, some of these svekos still apply. So how does one deal with this? So he presents four answers here. Three of them are from people a little bit, somewhat modern times, but not modern times. So one is the answer from the Minchas Elazar. Minchas Elazar was the Munkacher Rebbe. There's actually, if you want, you can catch a video of the Munkacher Rebbe. He died in 1937, but there's a video circulating online when he went to a convention. I think they put a video on him and said, "Do you have a message for the Jews in America?" And he said, and he just yelled into the video, "Shabbos." You saw that? You see, you can catch it online. So he was a fiery personality. He wrote a Sefer Minchas Elazar, which is a halachic classic, Ad Yom Hazeh. He's famous for a shita that if you go to Israel and you're visiting from outside of Israel, you go to Israel for Yontif, you only have to keep one day. The story goes that he actually went to Israel. There's a story about him. There's a lot of folklore, I don't know if folklore or fact, about his visit to Israel. And he was there over Yontif and said, "How could it be that I'm going to keep a second day of Yontif? Everybody, like, it just can't be." So he paskined that you'll only keep one day of Yontif. Anyways, he has a bunch of very interesting shitas. My family is actually theoretically Munkach. My father's father grew up not in Munkach, but
David Weiss is Munkach.
Okay, I mean, many people. If you come from Hungary, Eastern Hungary, so many people fall under the Munkach category, but they're also ardent anti-Zionists. And I have a feeling they have a big shtul in Borough Park, very close to where my grandfather's house was, but my grandfather never went there. I have a feeling that might have been the reason. But anyways, the Minchas Elazar said, well, you count days. How do you define a day? You define a day by Vayerev, Vayiboker, Yom Rishon. So if there is no day that switches over, guess what? It's still the same day. In which case, if you're at the North Pole, you would keep Shabbos every 7 years. That seems to be what his Shita is. That is a little bit difficult to accept. I wasn't able to find it inside. But that's Shita number one. Shita number two comes from the Tiferes.
You would have 7 years of Shabbos.
You would have 1 year of Shabbos.
Oh, 1 year of Shabbos.
Yeah. But then you would have, imagine a 3 day Yontif. Yeah. but how do you cheshbon that out with anything else? I mean, you run into a lot of problems. Right. How do you figure out when Pesach is? I'm not sure how you would carry that out.
I thought isn't there a principle that you can't separate yourself from the rest of the world? Right? I mean, you can't have Shabbos all year or for 3 years if the rest of the world is having it every day.
I don't know. I didn't see it inside. It's I don't know. I didn't see it inside. Lemaisa, you wonder at his era, was he talking theoretically or was he talking practically? I don't know. I wasn't able to track it down inside. The Tiferes Yisrael, however, I was able to track down inside. The Tiferes Yisrael was someone named Rav Yisrael Lipschitz. He lived in the early part of the 1800s. He has a lot of interest, somewhat of a modern thinker, had some ideas probably beyond his time. He talks about dinosaurs over the course of he talks about dinosaur bones. He's the one who has the theory that dinosaur bones, even though they're dated to be much older than the age of the universe, because of the flood messed up all the dating procedures. That actually comes from the Tiferes Yisrael, which one might not appreciate as much as that, but if you think about the era that he's writing in, it's a pretty impressive comment to make. So, I guess he lived around the same time as Rav Hirsch. Yes. Yes. So he has at the end of the first perek in Maseches Brachos, he wrote a commentary on Mishnayos. So at the very end of the first perek of Maseches Brachos, he discusses this in the context of those mitzvahs, and he says, "What do you do?" And I had a little trouble figuring out what this was. B'mi shekara lo sheyavu b'kayitz samuch leha. Nord Pol, Nun Aleph Reish Dalet Pei Aleph Lamed. I wasn't sure about that. Nord Pol. Shasham Yish Ezo Chadash Ritzufim Bekayet Yom Mamish. That there's many days that connecting today, meaning you end up being day for many days in a row. V'roim Hachama Makefes Kol HaOfek Savim Mizrach Daro Marav Tzafon. And you see the sun goes around in a circle. Have you ever been there? You're nodding like you've been. No, you've never been to these places. Okay.
I've just been up from this north. I was in Amsterdam.
Amsterdam. Edmonton has some of these challenges. Yeah. So ve'echis naig ha'Yisraeli ha'bal l'sham im hasfanim shehochem l'sham letzud hatanim hagdolim. And what do you do there? Jews going there in boats to capture hatanim hagdolim. So anybody know what those are? Tanim gdolim. I assume he's talking about whales. Big fish, tanim gdolim, big sea serpents. But he has in parentheses here volfisha. Not sure what that is. Walrus maybe. I'm not sure. There's some kind of trade that was going on that Europeans were going to the North Pole to capture these things. Although, I don't know, do walruses exist in the European Arctic Circle? Not sure. Anyways, so Matai's man.
They're a type of seal, right?
Hmm?
And they're not a fish.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Well, taninim gdolim are sea creatures. In Bereishis, in the fifth day of creation, we talk about the taninim gdolim that appeared in the.
Leviathan.
Someone interpreted me and said that is the Leviathan, but it could have been, you know. Right. There are other big sea creatures. So Matizmat Filosu Kyushma Shakazara, so Taya Yishvos Shabasu. So when should you daven Shakas and Marva, when should you have Shabbos? So Yishlom or Sham Simon Akhir Yishlo. Maybe there's another sign. The Sham Hashamish Makif Micholdad Ruchos Kol Chafdalid Shaos. That it will go in all four directions every 24 hours. You can Yudea Shekol HaKafa Echad Shetasa Hashemesh. That you know that each rotation that the sun does, you know is one day. But V'im Kain Im Yavo L'Sham L'Fi Cheshbonu B'Yom Echad Yadash HaKafa Hashviya Shetasa Hashemesh Yom Shabbos. So you know if you show up there, so you know this every seven ones is going to be Shabbos. Avakashman Shakas or Arvish Lo Yada, even though you're not going to know when is morning and when is night. Vaidzelo Yada Gabki Matis Matis of Yitzia Shabbos. And just as you don't know when day comes in and when day goes out, you're also not going to know when Shabbos comes. Ve'yachis Naheg Im Kafi Toshve Europe or Kafi Toshve America. So should you assume that it's Shabbos according to those that live in Europe or those that live in America? Right, if you end up at the North Pole, you're going to end up in the same plot. The more further north, you're going to end up in the same place. But you're going to say, oh, well, I'll go according to the way it was. Well, you could end up in the same place, but coming from different places. In which case, so what are you going to do? Right, we know that those two places are in the circle around the world. Right, and you're... it's directly under you. When you make Kiddush on Shabbos in Europe, that's Friday morning in America. So it's pretty. This was before the Greenwich Treaty of it was in 1880s, I think, when they made the treaty about that Greenwich was going to be the middle of the world. So this is a challenge. But they still had the concept of time zones. They were just thousands of them, based on every city had their own time zone. The same thing. Motzei Shabbos for Europe is the morning in America. So how do you do this? So his conclusion, he goes on, it's pretty nice, a long description, not somewhat lengthy, but his conclusion is that it depends on where you come from. Depending on where you come from, that's the way that you're going to celebrate Shabbos, and that's what I guess you'll figure out with regards to the Zmanim of the Yom. So that's a little bit problematic. So their example, they're talking, he's writing from the Star K, so he writes, so if you come from Baltimore, you're going to keep the Zmanim of Baltimore. So I'm not sure that's exactly what the Pharisees all meant. I think he might have meant just the way you're coming, from the point. I don't think he was talking precisely. I think he was talking a little more generally. But either way, you still run into this problem where you can have two people standing next to each other that have different zmanim for when Shabbos should be beginning and ending. So that is practically a difficult thing to accept. It's also not so practical. Also, the way they interpret it as well. If you come from Baltimore, you keep in Baltimore. I'm not sure that's what he meant either. I think he means depending on where the last place you were that had normal Zmanim, that's what you're going to maintain when you go forward. But of course, if you're flying, so how do you figure that out? But all right, anyways, I'm not sure the Pharisee Stroll is really that acceptable either. Yes?
I vaguely remember, was it an astronaut?
Yes.
Yes. Oh, so my plan is to talk about outer space also.
Yeah, I'm good. That's how it is.
Although running out of time, too many Lubavitch stories. So source number three is from the Ben Yishchai. So Ben Yishchai says, listen, if there's no sun, or if there is always sun, if you can't figure out time based on that, so how are you going to figure out time? So you just divide it up in 24 hours, and 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. is one's month, and 6 p.m. to 6 a.m. is the other's month. That's it. That's the end of the story. There's no other way of working it. So you have a clock, yeah. You have a clock, and that's the only way of figuring it out. And then you have the sheet of the Modim Uzmanim. Now, of those four sheetahs, Modim Uzmanim is still alive. The other one, Ben Yishchai, passed away in 1909. So he is not just the only one still alive, he's also the only one post-1940 where travel and air travel became much more regular. So the Modim Uzmanim in Chelik Beis Simon Kufnun Hei has what's called Kuntres Bebir Uzman Seisak Ucham L'chol Dini HaTorah, how to figure out when Seisak Uchamim is. And in the beginning of that, he has a footnote. So on the bottom of the page, he has a footnote where he says, I found many achronim, they have a discussion about this. And it says, "Matzasi be'iza poskim shemonim shama tamid shavos yubish." I saw some poskim that say 12 hours, 12 hours. And he said, it's difficult for me to rely on this. And he says, "Mischad for the regemash b'shashav shemesh harchakim." So what he says is, you have to figure out where it is when the sun is in its southernmost spot. That's considered midday. In fact, if you look at our sun doesn't go straight overhead, right? Our sun circles to the south and then goes right. It rises in the east, goes. Well, I'm not sure which way is east or west in this room, but goes southwards and then ends up west. So if you look at, a sundial in the middle of the day, it will be pointing in a particular direction. It's not just straight overhead. It goes in a particular direction. So he says that's how you go, and southernmost direction. Whenever it's in the southernmost point, that's what you're going to consider midday. So you know based on that hour. But there's no such thing as night. The Yehudi Agar Sham, if your Jew lives there, so he loses all mitzvahs that exist at night. So what mitzvahs are there at night? There's only one mitzvah at night, and that is Kriyas Shema. That's the main mitzvah that you have to do at night. There is no night except for the moment when the calendar switches. So the calendar switches from one day to the next. That moment we're going to call night. But it's very hard to, you know, you don't exactly know when that moment is. So lachin be'emes ein liyehudi lagur b'kis b'kavoseda. So therefore, it's really not appropriate for a Jew to live in these places. And if it's close to the south, letzir hadiromi she'ein yom klal, I guess the south pole, when there's no time at all, rak laila, although it switches based on time of the year, right? So during the winter, when there is no sun, that means there's no day. So therefore, you certainly have a real problem living there, because how are you going to say Shema or any of those mitzvahs? You don't have that moment. But it is helpful, according to what he's saying, is that, let's say you're flying over these places, so you could assume if it's light outside, it qualifies as daytime, and if it's dark outside, it's qualifying as nighttime. The problem is only, right, is you could daven when you're above the North Pole, assuming that if it's light out, assuming that it's daytime, and you don't have to worry about it, you don't have to say, well, it's night. So that is those are the four shitos. Right? Again, Minchas Elazar saying that, well, it's just based on the reality, it might be this a multi-year week. Then you have the Tiferes Yisrael, who says that it's based on where you came from. The Ben Yishchai saying you go 12 to 12. And you have the Moadim Uzmanim saying that, well, you can cheshbon it out based on where you are, figuring it out based on the rotations of the sun. So the day is going to change. It's just you're not going to technically have night. So how does that come out practically? How does the article conclude? The article, of course, concludes by saying, well, consult your local Orthodox rabbi. Okay. But then he goes on and says, but these are the recommendations that Rav Heineman has. Rav Heineman is the posig for the Star K, the Rav of Baltimore. So these are his suggestions. So he says that when you're in places that are below the Arctic Circle, so they're in places like Oslo, Stockholm, Alaska, so those are below the Anchorage is pretty far below it's closer to the Arctic Circle than we are, but there still is a significant, there's like the whole state of Alaska before you get to the Arctic Circle. So it never gets fully dark. So how do we paskin there? So Rav Heineman says when it gets sunset is still considered sunset, but the twilight period is extremely long. So there are things that it absolutely needs to be night for. You can't assume that it's night. So what does it absolutely need to be night for? So really just two things. One is Shema, and the second one is ending Shabbos. Those two things are important for it. It has to actually be dark. So he suggests you could say Shema when it turns twilight, because we can. But you should repeat Shema after Chatzos. The problem is Chatzos, midnight, could be 2 a.m., right? So, well, okay, the sun's never setting anyway, so you just party all night. But he said, if that's difficult, so you could say Shema, and in the morning, say in the morning or something, but you can say Shema after it becomes after it's been sunset for a significant amount of time. Havdalah, you in theory would have to wait till if there's really no time that it becomes dark. So he says you have to wait till after midnight, and it's not dark still. So you really can only say Havdalah. You don't make the Eish and you don't do the Besamim. Eish and Besamim are only done Saturday night, so you wouldn't make the bracha on Eish or Besamim. He says if that's the case, you could also technically do Havdalah while it's still Shabbos. You could do Havdalah as soon as it starts getting dark, what we refer to as Plag HaMincha, so you could already say Havdalah then, technically, although I wouldn't advise it. So as soon as I got asked this once, there was a David Ekman's son, Yoni, went to Alaska after he got married, so he asked me about during the summer. And so I told him, Saturday night, just go to sleep, and when you wake up, make Havdalah. You can't, without Besamim and Eish, I don't think you can really start making Cheshbonos about the exact moment and stuff like that. So that is practically what we passed it. The same thing would apply with regards to the daytime, meaning the sun doesn't actually totally really rise, but you would still refer to it as daylight. Okay. Right, so in which case, the way what he points out here in Anchorage, Alaska, on December 18th, the sun rises 10:12 and sets at 3:40. In which case,
wow.
Right, in which case, Shabbos would end at 5 o'clock. The day is so short, we may not begin chakras until 9 a.m., right? 9 a.m., and that's still before sunrise. So, like, what we do it also. We daven before sunrise after dawn. So dawn is 9 a.m., though. You have to wait till 9 a.m. in order to daven chakras. Shabbos begins at 3:22 during the darkest parts of the year, which, you know, the truth is, our Shabbos is starting 4:25 or something. That's not so ridiculous. In Boston, Shabbos starts sometimes in the threes. There was a family in Phoenix, was there east and north of us. There was a family in Phoenix that moved there. I asked them, like, why did you move from Boston? I said, why did you move here from Boston? He said, oh, Shabbos is too early. Shabbos starts 3 o'clock. We couldn't handle it, so we moved to Phoenix. Shabbos never starts before 5, because they don't change the clocks there. So Shabbos, it's much easier. Okay? And then he said, so those are places how to deal with when there is still some amount of night. When you get to places where it's completely, where you really can't figure out, the sun doesn't rise at all. So he paskins here, you have to be machmir to both. You have to be machmir with both the Ben Ish Chai as well as the Moedim Zmanim, Rav Schoenbach. So that means, because there's not really a sun to deal with. So if there's no sun, that would mean during the winter, Shabbos starts 12 o'clock, chatzos of midday of Friday, and goes till nightfall of Shabbos. And so you're actually going to keep a 30 something hour Shabbos, and during the summer it's going to be the same thing, right? 12 o'clock till very late at night, because we don't, if there's no real sun to deal with, so maybe the Ben Ish Chai is right, in which case you have to that you just go 12 to 12. So if you're going to go 12 to 12, so then not 12 o'clock, you would go 6 o'clock. You would go, according to the Ben Ish Chai, you would go 6 o'clock Friday till 11, 12 o'clock or something on Saturday. And at the absolute North Pole or South Pole, where the sun is up the entire time, so you would figure it out. It's a little complicated what his kashman is. I just want to go through one more, although not really so much more time, but just one issue. He has a small discussion here, but Rabbi Bleich in Contemporary Halachic Questions has a couple of pages in Contemporary Halachic Problems, Volume 1, page 211. He discusses the idea of mitzvos on the moon. So can one actually keep mitzvos on the moon? So there is a journal called Noam. Thank you. So in Noam, you can find it on HebrewBooks.org. Amazing, these things nowadays. So there is a give and take in the 5730 issue of Noam. There's someone named Rabbi Ben Sion Fuhrer. I'm not sure who that is. I think there was a Rabbi Fuhrer who was a rabbi in Holyoke, Massachusetts, who was recognized as maybe the greatest Talmud Chacham in America. Anybody know where Holyoke, Massachusetts is? Holyoke is, yeah?
I was married there.
You're married in Holyoke, Massachusetts?
Yeah.
Why?
Where it is, right?
My wife's from Springfield, Massachusetts.
Oh.
And the nearest Orthodox shul was in Holyoke.
The nearest Kadima didn't exist yet? In Springfield? My uncle is the rabbi in Springfield, Massachusetts. That's why I know these things. So Holyoke is a little bit north of Springfield. It is Springfield, Massachusetts is home of the Basketball Hall of Fame, of all things. That's where James Naismith invented the game. Holyoke, Massachusetts is the home of the Volleyball Hall of Fame, for reasons I have no idea. But remember, on one Chol Hamoed trip, we ended up seeing the Volleyball Hall of Fame. There also is the home of Mount Tom Ski Resort, which is where I learned to ski. So anyways, I'm not sure if this is the same Rabbi Fuhrer or not, but anyways, he was the Rav of that town. And he has some involvement in the Rav getting his position in Boston. There's some history there. But anyways, he writes that that he thinks that there is no mitzvahs on the moon. Mitzvahs just don't apply. He says, at first glance, mitzvahs don't apply because the pasuk in Kedushin, the Gemara in Kedushin discusses how we know the mitzvahs apply in Chutz La'aretz. So it has a pasuk to tell you mitzvahs aren't obviously in Eretz Yisrael, and he brings a verse to prove that mitzvahs apply outside of Israel. So he says, okay, we have a verse to prove that mitzvahs apply outside of Israel. We don't have a verse to prove that mitzvahs apply outside of the world, in which case maybe mitzvahs don't apply outside the world at all. He also quotes here from a rabbi, from Rav Goren, Rav Shlomo Goren. Rav Shlomo Goren just said that mitzvahs apply, but time-bound mitzvahs don't apply. There's no, halakha doesn't recognize time outside of the land of Israel. He then also quotes here that Rabbi Fuhrer also had an idea that there's a Gemara in Gittin that discusses if you're in, how do you know, when do you actually get into Israel if you're taking a boat into Israel? So when are you halakhically in the land of Israel? So as long as you're still floating in the water, you're not Israeli. Only when your boat makes land, touches land, then all of a sudden the boat becomes part of Israel. So he says that the same thing would apply to the moon, even though you're coming from America, from the earth. When you land at the moon makes everything that you came with moon-like, in which case mitzvahs aren't going to apply anymore at that point. But it sounds like, according to that, it would apply in outer space, meaning mitzvahs would apply in outer space, just not when you land on another body. Then he has, at the end of that edition of Noam, that volume of this journal where Rabbi Fuhrer wrote that mitzvahs don't apply. So there's an article from Menachem Mendel Kasher. Menachem Mendel Kasher was a very famous in America. He wrote something called Torah Shlema, which they have in the library over there. A very big Talmud Chacham scholar, etc. So he writes that I take some solace in the fact that Rabbi Fuhrer wrote that those were his first thoughts, because I hope they aren't his second thoughts, because I hope he has second thoughts. And I believe that mitzvahs so would apply to the moon. There is no way that mitzvah, that there could be any, that a person could end up in any place where mitzvahs will not be applicable. And he has his suggestion how you're going to work it out. You'd follow the 24-hour basis. You'd assume the 12-hour day, like with Ben Yishchai. That seems to be the position that Rav Heinemann talks about here in this article, very briefly. He also mentions that works. What about if you circle the Earth, if you're in orbit, and you circle the Earth several times? So how many times do you have to do mitzvahs over the course of that day? He says, no. For that, you would only keep one day based on a person in America. I mean, you would still kind of be bound, or in the world. You would, well, someplace in the world. I mean, you would only be according to someplace in Israel. But Shabbos, he suggests, you would have to keep according to anybody in the world. So if it's Shabbos according to anybody in America, you would have to be Chayiv, which means that not only would you keep Shabbos for 2 days, but because there's a question about the date line, you would actually keep Shabbos for 3 days. Possible. So before you sign up for the Virgin Atlantic trip to outer space, you might want to make sure that it's not on a Friday, Shabbos, or Sunday. So those are some of the issues. He concludes it by saying that although we might have questions about Zman, about mitzvahs, don't worry, kosher food can be found, Star K Hashkachos have been found all the way in the North Pole, food shouldn't be a problem anymore, it's just a question of figuring out some of your other mitzvahs. Alright, have a good Shabbos.